The Reserve Pool, Episode 49, Canadian Nationals and Age of Ultron Super Rares. Everybody, and welcome to episode 49 of The Reserve Pool, a podcast about Dice Masters and, more importantly, all of the people who love to play it. This is Dave here.
This is Evan.
And Randy.
Hey, Randy, how you doing?
Hey, I'm doing well over here. How are you guys?
Hanging in. We don't see you on the show all that often.
Yep. Yeah. ever since we got together...
For that time when we actually saw you on the show because we were all together in one room.
Yes.
Yeah, I like that, and so I've decided to move in on this podcast for just this occurrence.
Well, this is your first one here. Well, second one here. Should be third if you had recorded the one the right way. Inside baseball, folks. Sorry about that. Should be the third. But, of course, we're going to be able to hear a whole lot of you on the Attack Zone, which is a podcast that... Actually, we just started and should have been released somewhere around Tuesday, depending on how long iTunes approval process takes.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to that, getting out there on a regular basis.
Absolutely. All right, then. But Randy, you are not alone, are you? Who do you have with you there?
No. And some of you are probably going to guess that Abigail was with me, but that is not the case. This is not Abigail. This is actually a rather large male. This is the Canadian national champion, JT.
Oh, Canada, my
home. Oh, sorry. Okay. Hi, JT. How are you, man?
Good. How are you guys?
We're good. Hey, congrats on the win, sir. Excellent. Well, very well done.
Thank you. Thank you. Appreciate that. It was a lot of fun.
Yeah, so you're a new voice to everybody, and obviously representing our Reserve Pool community well at Canadian Nationals. You and a couple of others, in fact. So great that there were three users that were in the top eight, and so great that the guy who won is somebody that is, you know, a personal friend of one of us. So that's fantastic. So tell us a little bit about yourself, kind of how you came to the game and things like that. You know, what makes you a Dice Master?
Well, I mean, I've put on the website a couple times. I think, you know, Randy introduced me to the game, and I've been hooked since the first match we played where he put out just two cost characters, I think, and it's just been a lot of fun. You know, we played some online, a lot in person, probably at least about once a week we play in person, and just got sucked in like everybody else, I'm a real person, just like anybody else. Work a job, you know, wife and kids, and play this when I can. So
that's cool. Yeah, very, very cool. So wait, Randy, you actually taught him with the starter game?
Yeah. Well, I didn't use the starter game. I just flipped open the binder and was like, "Here's some low cost characters that we can buy early on. Let me show you what the game is like with these."
I was going to say, if you use the starter game, we might have to kick you out of the network.
Yeah. No worries there.
That's awesome. So, obviously, today we want to talk a whole lot about Canadian Nationals and what that was like. Certainly, we had our experience at U.S. Nationals, and that's something that's well-known at this point. And I bet there are plenty of parallels, and there are also plenty of departures as well. And then a little bit later on in the show, we're going to talk about those Age of Ultron super rares, those awesome, awesome super rares, all eight of them. And, that's really exciting, too. You know, Dylan made the point in the DC article that he dropped last Wednesday that you get new stuff and then they entice you with the other cool stuff that's on the horizon. That's exactly what happens. DC is just, you know, it just comes out. And then it's, by the way, look at this sweet, sweet Age of Ultron stuff you're about to get with those spoilers that were posted on Facebook, and then of course the super rares that we got first from your uncut sheet that you won at the Canadian Nationals.
Yeah, it's fantastic. The momentum that they build and then just continue with, I don't know how any of us are going to be able to stay with it financially, but it's a lot of fun for right now.
I think they're going to start spacing out the sets a little more, so it's not like, oh, and here's a new set every month, because, oh man, that's tough.
I want to say they tried to catch up from the delays that that Uncanny X-Men had. So I think we'll probably see like 5-ish a year, and I think that's about right. You know, a new set every 2 to 2.5 months is okay with me. And considering that getting a starter and a gravity feed don't really cost that much, it's not hard to fit this into our little, you know, board game leisure time budget.
Indeed.
So, all right, well, let's get to it. Let's talk about Canadian Nationals and do a little bit of debrief from that. JT, you had to be our eyes and ears, and thank you so much for giving the little running blog post until you had to start texting everything to Randy. I get the impression that there were a lot of cops on the trip.
No, just in New York.
Okay.
That was the only place. It was a long drive. Holy smokes. Took 9 hours to get there with the time at the border. And then when I showed up, like, you know, I hadn't eaten and you know, there's a restaurant next door. So I got Wi-Fi and was able to hit Randy up and say, hey, I need everything I text you. You got to update because I'm not going to have this while I'm playing. And then I ran into the guys, the other guys who were registered at the reserve pool. And, you know, there are a few others who said they do some reading, but, you know, really just those two who were contributors. And now I think there's another guy, the guy who came in second in the tournament, has started contributing too. So,
hey, I love the referral business. That's strong. All right. I do a little bit of sales in my day job, and the referral business is a key part. So thank you for that.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's just a cool atmosphere. Like I said, on the running journal, like I didn't expect the HeroClix thing to be going on the way it was. You know, I walked in the store and it's not all that much bigger than the local store that Randy and I have here. And, it was just absolutely packed with tables and chairs and I couldn't get in. And, I finally got to the back and saw 4 people playing Dice Masters. And I thought, well, this is not going to be that large of a tournament if this is all it's going. There were obviously guys playing HeroClix who came over and played Dice Masters, and some guys showed up later on. But it was just a really neat day in general.
Yeah, it certainly sounds like it. So it definitely also sounds like a different experience from going into that shopping mall and having all the disused storefronts. Frankly, I'm nothing against HeroClix players, but with as many of them as there were, it would have been pretty difficult to have to carry on what we were doing with Dice Masters in the same room. The room that we were in had Dice Masters and Attack Wing with the occasional HeroClix Battle Royales happening in between. Yeah. And we were all on one side of the room. Everybody else was all on the other side of the room. And I think it worked pretty well. So that must have been kind of chaotic, I have to imagine.
It was at first. And then we got started, they actually had made the cut in the HeroClix, and so they had started with their top 8, which cleared out a lot of the room, but, you know, there was still a lot of people watching, of course. And so we were lined up on folding tables, three to a 6-foot table, so there was not a lot of room for your game. And the next one was, you know, if you were in the middle, man, it was like sardines.
Yeah, bumping elbows.
Yeah, we were a little on the tight side at what was it?
For
Baltimore
a couple of the
Nationals?
Drafts, yeah. For U.S. Nationals. For a couple of the drafts especially, it was pretty tight. For most of the constructed play, it was okay, I thought.
I agree with that. Sometimes it got a little tight, but...
Yes. Oh, well, geez, that one draft I did. I don't know what the heck I was thinking doing a rainbow draft after I had played in 2 qualifiers. But I'm, like, hanging off the edge of the table. I was half asleep. I didn't draft real well. Well, I drafted okay. I didn't construct my team very well. And, meanwhile, dice are going all over the place, and it was a mess. So, yeah. Did they have any side events going for Dice Masters up there, or was it really strictly just the constructed tournament?
No, they had side events all the day before, I was told. And when I showed up, the 4 guys that I mentioned I ran into, they were finishing up a rainbow draft. It was actually a mixed draft between Yu-Gi-Oh! And D&D.
Oh.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
Huh. You know, that's kind of like how Chris just was talking to us about his mixed draft with AVX and UXM, which is interesting, but I don't know if it's something I love. But we certainly all said that Yu-Gi-Oh! And D&D, like, D&D makes Yu-Gi-Oh! More fun. And I wonder how those would pair with all the dragons.
Yeah, the guys said the TRP guys I was talking to said it was good. And I guess kind of the way they were intending for that to work was that you had to do a rainbow draft of another IP in order to get into a rainbow draft for DC. But there was just no time at the end. So you bought into that rainbow draft of the other IP. They gave you a token then that you could buy into the DC drafts. Well, at the end of the night, these guys were like, well, we're not sticking around, but here's our tokens. Let us buy stuff. And they did. Okay. So, I mean, they were cool about it, but...
I kind of like that better because we certainly went to U.S. Nationals excited to draft some D&D, and then it just never happened. Everybody everybody's taken in by the new shiny, which is fine and understandable.
They ran through, I think, the entirety of the DC stock they had, which was significant. I think it was like 30 or 40 boxes.
Well, yeah,
heck yeah, well, you had like Sean Eli bought like six boxes himself. Yeah.
Well, there were a couple guys. They all went there like from the same shop. But they didn't even participate in any of the qualifiers. They just drafted the entire time. And
the guys in the maroon shirts?
Yeah.
Yeah, I talked to them. Super, really nice guys, yeah.
They actually, they literally drafted as long as they could before they absolutely had to leave if they wanted to be home with enough time to sleep before, like, work at 5 in the morning.
Yeah, well, that was pretty cool, though. I love seeing people who are that into draft, and maybe things like that will make draft a little more serious. You know, I'd love to see a tournament that's just focused on draft. That would be really cool. You know, with Magic the Gathering, you have events that are like sometimes equal parts. Hey, this we're doing modern now, and hey, this one is this one is going to be draft, and hey, this one is going to be standard, and this one is legacy, and you know, all those at the Grand Prix and Pro Tour level. And I think this game could support it. But
yeah.
We're still young.
Yeah, I would really like to see, you know, a nationals or a world tournament that is draft. I mean, Constructed is fun. Constructed's great. It uses all of the, you know, everything that's come out. But a real, you know, national tournament for drafting, I think that would be real cool.
I have to agree.
And you could argue there's some luck of the draw involved, but, you know, it's Dice Masters. There's luck of the draw involved anyway. And, I mean, we had one of the drafts, someone pulled the super rare Constantine, and they were eliminated in the first round, so...
Well, yeah, I mean, getting it doesn't mean you have all the tools in the set to use it. I think certainly super rare Constantine shines best within Constructed. There's things you can do with it, but DC doesn't quite have the same kind of removal. Or it has removal, but in different ways. But all right, so that's the day at Nationals. Anything else you kind of want to say about just sort of the day itself before we get into some more detailed stuff?
You know, just it flew by. It was remarkable. Yeah. And then, you know, then we finish up and, you know, I wrap up about 10:30 or 11. And then I got a 9-hour drive home and I drove till 6, just totally amped up. Just like riding high, not a tired thought at all until about 6.
Well, so. you were driving home, you crossed the border. And then once you were back in U.S. airwaves, you gave me a call, and that's when I started getting all the information of the new super rares, typing up my article, you know, 1:30 in the morning, he's telling me all this stuff. And I'm like, all right, man, I hate to do this to you, but I got to go to bed. You keep on driving. You have fun. And so I wake up, and I'm getting ready for work in the morning, and I look at my phone. I'm like, you know what? I bet JT's still driving. So I gave him a call.
I was still driving at that point.
Yeah, still driving. I'm getting ready for work, and it was yesterday had to be a long day for you, man.
Yesterday was bad.
I'm amazed that you're like awake to do this, and I'm very pleased. I'm very pleased you could. I know you have some other stuff going on, so I'm glad we could squeeze this in. But you know, I certainly can relate to that. I think all of us driving home from, we all had a pretty positive end to U.S. Nationals as well, right? You know, making top 8. Randy, you finished up winning that draft and things like that. And we're driving home and we're like, this is cool. Like I think we were talking constantly on the way home.
Yeah.
And, I definitely want to do Canadian Nationals next year. I want to try to get to as many, tournaments as I can, next year. Heck, maybe we should start some of our own. I don't know, but
I'm gonna hopefully defend my title.
Yeah, that's allowed. That's allowed. Let's all go. Let's make it happen. It'll be fun. I just want to play. I just want to play this game. I don't even care. I am gonna be able to go to Worlds. I'm making the second qualifier, just kind of by the skin of my teeth on time here with it. But it's gonna happen. And gosh, I don't even care. I'm just so excited to go where a whole bunch of people are going to be playing and talk to them and look at what people are playing and everything else. Like, yes, of course I want to win. Of course I want to do well. But I'm so excited that the game is getting to a point where it's supporting these national level tournaments. All right, so JT, let's move then into the team. Again, we're not gonna go too specific, too deep here, but we do want to kind of give an overview. And everybody, you can see this on the forums. He has the he has a thread up. Actually, it's on the blogs too. Preparing for competitive play. I got the link here. So yeah, that's all up. So we had Spider-Man Webslinger, which is the one where you can pay a fist to force every opposing character to block him. You had Nick Fury Patch, the rare, doubles the unblocked Avengers attacks. We had Hulk Jade Giant, which I know was the linchpin, and we were all talking about Jade Giant, so I'm glad we got the chance to test that. Black Widow Sarina, because she's a reliable 2-drop, I'm sure. The Iceman that spins bolts. Professor X Trainer. Doom Calibur Knight, the one with the fist glow, will pay fist when you attack. Your monsters cannot be the target of actions or card abilities. And then Slifer the Sky Dragon that gives the Tim ability. Pay a bolt to deal 1 damage to target monster. And then you had Polymorph, which we all know, and Invulnerability, which we all know too. You had Invulnerability, I'm sure, mostly because of the global there.
Yeah.
Okay.
And I really felt like it could wreck my day less than Enrage. You know, if somebody bought Enrage and then forced Fury out of the field to attack, and I didn't have a way to bring it back, that was gonna wreck my days.
Absolutely. So let's talk about, like, what would you say the all-star was on your team? Yeah. Oh, there you go. Well, I mean, I look at this, and the core of it is very similar to the team that Randy and I use at Nationals. We moved in here Black Widow instead of Ant-Man, which makes sense. She has more consistent defensive stats on level 3 and whatever else, and has that cool ability. Then you also moved in the Spider-Man Web-Slinger there. So that's pretty cool. And then, of course, changing Hulk, Jade Giant was really the key. So I think it's a conclusion that a lot of us talked about, and I'm sure you and Randy talked about it. Randy and I talked about it. We all talked about it. Talk about Jade Giant a little bit.
Well, you know, obviously if there's a ton of characters in the field, it's a little bit of a challenge. He's not quite the utility to wipe the board of weenies that Green Goliath is, but when you need spot removal for somebody who's got decent defense, like a Nova or like
Jinzo
or Wolverine, you know, formerly Weapon 10, which we saw a
or
bunch
Green
of.
Goliath.
Green Goliath, exactly. You know, it's funny, a bunch of people had Green Goliath, but not very many people got him out. He was more kind of a sideshow. You know, he was on the team, but people didn't really run him the way that certainly you or Randy would have. And
that's very surprising, actually.
A little bit. I think people saw him and saw his utility and then put him on their team, and then in the middle of a game, you know, they're more focused on their own win condition and didn't recognize the need to get him out and try and use him the way you guys did.
Well, frankly, sitting across from you with Jade Giant, I might be looking, if I have Green Goliath, I might be looking for another way, because Jade Giant is the way to end the Hulk smash. When we had Green Goliath against Green Goliath, you had to sit there and do math, and Randy and I were both in games when this happened. Like, how can we get stuff knocked out where I end up with a better board than my opponent? And that wasn't always easy to do. But Jade Giant, as soon as he takes damage, bam, your Hulk's knocked out, and that ping pong match ends. So
yeah.
Jade Giant, you look at it, just kind of the way that Genetic Expert makes me think twice about even bothering to buy a Black Widow, Jade Giant makes me think twice about going for my Green Goliath.
Yeah, it's kind of funny. A lot of people actually just assume that he was Green Goliath. So, you know, like once when I pinged him and I said, I'll ping Hulk and knock out Nova, you know, the guy looked at me and was like, his defense is 7. I was like, yeah, this is not Green Goliath, you know. He's gone. So, And it's interesting, too, because in my very first game in the Swiss rounds, played against a version of Flying Sidekicks, and the guy playing him, Hunter, was, you know, just doing his best and keeping the field full. And then he got Johnny Storm out and started fielding a whole bunch of stuff. And I just took the damage, and he pinged Nick Fury off. And it never even occurred to me during the turn that, hey, I'm taking damage. I can just, I can use Jay Giant. Yeah, so it didn't occur to me during the turn. And I caught it for the next turn, and, you know, I obviously survived and won that match. But you're so used to just doing it when you ping Hulk that when you take damage, you got to really be aware. And that was kind of a wake-up call to me. I thought, man, that drive did more to me than I thought mentally. I gotta bump this up and really focus.
Well, you know, the other side of Green Goliath, too, is that it can be a deterrent for Black Widow's arena, which is another reason that a lot of us had Black Widow on the team. I know that Dave Walsh, Green Goliath on the team. Dave Walsh cited that specifically, and certainly that's a big justification because she hits you for two, but then that's going to trigger your Hulk. Maybe Jay Giant isn't quite the deterrent, but still doing something and then giving you the option to just wipe something off the board is good. So, you talk about a little more with Jade Giant. You have, when somebody has a lot of stuff field, exactly what you said, he's not the board sweeper that Green Goliath can be. So let's talk a little bit then with what your plan was to deal with some of those weenie decks.
Well, I really only played one, and it kind of took me by surprise. The sidekick team I played, once I got rid of the non-sidekicks, it was just a matter of plinking him off during his turn or mine, and beyond that, it was really just about stabilizing against that team and then swinging for big damage. When I played against the weenie wall, I struggled. That game I was behind the whole game, and the guy playing it, Patrick, it just seemed like he was rolling 14 dice every turn, and there was nothing I could do about it. And he would attack with four and leave four on, and eventually I just got my ramp back up, and I was able to say, well, here's seven bolts. I got you at 14 life, and I plinked off, like four sidekicks, and then I pinged Hulk three times and got the other stuff off the board, and then was able to swing for double. But I think I needed Hulk and Black Widow to do it because I didn't have any bolts left to bump Hulk up. So it was really,
you had Fury in the field then too?
I had a Fury in the field. Yeah. And I think I had to swing for, 14 or 16 to do it.
Wow.
Most of my games I won by swinging for 16, 14, 20. Most of my games, the win condition held. It was because I had Fury and attacked with Hulk.
Just bide your time, manage the field, and then strike.
That's it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that doesn't sound too uncommon. I think certainly that's a lot of the games that I was involved in, and Randy, probably you too. Evan, how about?
Yep. Yeah. No, when I lost to a Hulk, it was they sort of bid their time, and then the Hulk punched me in the face.
Yeah, that's pretty much how it goes.
They didn't use patch though that much. Mm-hmm. I never really ran into too much patch, but.
No, and I was kind of surprised because Patch Avengers has been pretty strong in the game from the very beginning, and I think it's just as good now because, even with DC out, just everything fits very well into, a two, buying a two, buying a four, then buying a six, and that's not bad at all, and Patch fits right in there, makes your two even better, and, of course, supports your six very well.
Yep.
And honestly, I didn't buy Patch until after I had Hulk in the field most turns. I bought a Polly on turn two, and then bought a Hulk turn three and Pollied him in most games. There were two games when I bought Patch second on turn two, and I only won one of them, and that was the game I high hoped with Black Widow, which was a rush in and of itself because the guy I was playing, Ron, A, didn't see it coming at all, and B, when it happened, he was kind of confused. He was like, is that legit? Did that happen? And you could just tell that was top four, the first game of top four. And, you could tell that he was just, it took him by surprise. And when we moved on,
a little harder to do it with Widow, but certainly still possible.
Yeah, it is a little harder. The energy has to work out just right, but when it happens, it was crazy.
Yeah. Wow. All right. So let's kind of look at more of a macro point of view. from what you had said, it sounded like there was a lot of Wolverine formerly Weapon 10 running around, and certainly I'm sure a lot of Polymorph as well.
Yeah, there was. And it was interesting, like, you know, there was a lot of Blue Eyes White Dragon, so you can buy that Polymorph turn one and keep your ramp and still roll seven dice on turn two. And mm-hmm. You know, there were games that ended in, you know, six or seven turns or less because there, you know, somebody would swing with Weapon 10 twice and it would be over. And so just a lot of relentless. I mean, it was everywhere because that's how that team works. And guys were not ashamed or afraid to leave their field empty if they were swinging for 12 damage. And then they figured, well, you know, that puts me ahead enough to manage this. And that happened to me in the game I lost against Wiley. You know, I didn't have any time to stabilize the field at all. But then when I was playing against those teams later on, I had a little better idea how to handle it. And you just control the board. I mean, once Hulk's on the board, you can keep Nova off. You can keep Wolverine off. You don't worry about the little guys. You keep their win condition off the board, and you keep somebody scrambling, trying to figure out how to deal with Hulk.
Yeah, having Jade Giant really gives you the removal benefit that something like Psylocke, the rare, has, but then you also get the synergy with the other Avengers that you bring with you. So, yeah, certainly I'm a big fan of that strategy, and I think a lot of us here on this podcast right now are, so... like a lot of us sitting right here recording today. But, So, with all of this kind of stuff, I mean, clearly what people brought was in response to what was set up with U.S. Nationals. People know, people watch, people saw. That's why there was a lot of Weapon 10. That's why there was a lot of Polymorph. So, now that we see, a team... a high hope style team with Jade Giant wins. How does this impact? Or you know, of course, we had other strong teams in the top eight as well, I'm sure. How does this impact things going forward? Like, where do we see this moving the game? And you know, JT, you were there, so I'm obviously going to defer to you, and you can go ahead and start with this.
Well, when people realized what Jade Giant was doing, everyone started buying Psylocke and. You know, that's fine if you knock him out. Actually, the other thing that happens is because, you know, I've got Slifer on my team, when I was playing Bolt teams, they would do something similar to what I saw you do in one of your matches, Dave, that, you know, they ping Hulk off and then start fielding. And it slows their ramp, but then at least, you know, their win condition is in the field on their turn for the attack step, and... You know, maybe they can swing. And the guy I played for the first match in the top eight, Luis, he did that to me a couple times. That was the match that went three games for me, and he pinged me off a couple times. So he saw it. He knew that was the way to deal with it. To just bite the bullet and spend, you know, the five bolts and get it done.
Yeah, definitely. It's an interesting thing. There was certainly one game I was involved in. It was like, okay, so if I ping his Hulk twice, then I field my Hulk and ping my Hulk, that'll wipe his Hulk, keep mine alive, and then I can field everything else. And it's such a crazy thought process, but it can work. I'm not surprised that you had to deal with some of that. So do we think, is Jade Giant something that's going to warrant a response? What do we think the response is? I think that's the big thing, is where does the game go from here? Because eyes were on teams that were in the top eight in the first one, eyes were on teams that are in the top eight in this one, and certainly all eyes are going to be on what people bring to Worlds. So how does this inform, of course, with DC coming out, that throws a little bit... or like maybe even a wrench into the works, but how is this going to inform what we see going forward? Like, what's the answer to Jade Giant, other than perhaps Weenie Rush?
Well, Jade Giant is...
Well, we see a lot of Jade Giant, even.
I think we will. I mean, Origins is going to be big enough that I think we'll see plenty of it. Jade Giant is an answer to itself. It's not a perfect answer, but it at least levels the playing field. You know, certainly... things like the new rare Lex Luthor that prevents you from even buying it is a thing.
Yeah.
You know, with Polymorph, you can't field cards like Loki and even Constantine, which removes the text. Those aren't as powerful because you just polymorph him in and it's not fielded. He's just in the field. Ta-da!
Right.
So right.
Yeah, I like that Lex Luthor, but his stats are just so low. I fear with things like Lex Luthor coming out, with Constantine, with stuff that already exists like Loki, of course we're going to have the Joker that does the same kind of thing. You can only do so much of, like, I stop you from doing anything, because you also then need a way to win. And people, I think, are going to experiment with some of that stuff, and they're going to be like, okay, you can't buy this. Okay, now this has no text. Okay, now we just sit here and stare across the table at each other, because I don't have enough to hit you, because everything I have controls you, and you can't get anything out that wins, and we'll just go to time.
Yeah, and that's that's honestly why I think you will see so much Jade Giant, because at least that keeps it competitive, and maybe it's not perfect, but it is an answer that I know that will be, you know, roughly as fast. Maybe you get yours in the field first, but if I get mine in the field, I still have priority, so I can ping yours off, and then do what I need to do. So I really think you're going to see a ton of it at Worlds.
I think so too, and I don't think that's a bad thing. I think that's the metagame. Okay, so we see Green Goliath and stuff. Okay, what can take care of that? Jade Giant. All right, Jade Giant, now we have that. Okay, so what can take care of that? And we're going to start to go A beats B, B beats C. Does A beat C? I don't know. And can C beat A? Back and forth. That's a metagame, and that's fantastic. So I'm really thrilled with what we're seeing going forward here, how the community is responding to the different builds that they see. That's development. That's the sign of health. It's not like some of the early published tournament results last year where every single team was Wind Rider, Black Widow, Gabi, Johnny Storm, Beast, and whatever else they brought. A Hawkeye oftentimes, a Gambit. And what they usually have finishing that out? Probably a Mr. Fantastic, or sometimes they have Silver Surfer.
Either that or maybe Punisher, McCrook.
Yeah, I mean, you'd see those kind of teams where it was basically carbon copies. We have a lot more variants now because we have a lot more sets, and DC is only going to increase that, and that's pretty cool. We have a lot more choices.
Yeah, so. That's good. That is moving forward.
That's a metagame. I love it. No, it's here.
Yeah, and as we get more and more options and they interact with each other more and more, we're going to get, you know, broader and broader team diversity, I think.
Absolutely, and you know, some of the things
that
I
hope.
me too. Well, it's certainly more diverse than it was, and we're only a year in. I mean, seriously, we're only a year in, and that's fantastic. The DC set was sort of a happy birthday to Dice Masters, and here we are, and you know, we just celebrated our first birthday on the 30th, and actually, this one is the we're coming up very closely. The episode after this is going to be, you know, 1 year for the podcast itself. So that's crazy too. So speaking then of shaping the meta, we had a whole bunch of cards spoiled from Age of Ultron. My favorite, of course, being the Wasp rare, which is like a mini Jinzo. But you can see all that on this site. What we want to talk about in just a moment here are the new super rares that we have coming to us from Age of Ultron. But before we do that, JT, is there anything else you want to say about Canadian Nationals?
Just that the community was so awesome. I mean, you know, I showed up and got a text from Dan, and he said, hey, are you here yet? He had got in touch with me on the site and knew I was coming, and so we exchanged cell numbers. And so I texted him back, yeah, you know, red and black jacket. And, you know, here he was 2 feet from me. You know, he got my text, then he looked up. He said, hey, I'm Dan. And really just everyone's super friendly. You know, I felt a little bit weird being the only American there in the tournament that I'm aware of. I didn't run into anyone else anyway. And, you know, sitting next to guys who were speaking French during their game. So that was interesting to me. But everyone was super friendly. And actually the guys who won the Attack Wing tournament and the HeroClix tournament apparently were the guys who won the American Nationals tournaments as well. I think America swept the Canadian Nationals tournaments, but
as it should be.
it was just a really good day. You know, everyone's super friendly. The guys running the whole thing at Carta Magica were great. You know, they were just in it to promote the game and create an environment for everyone to have fun, and I think we really did. So
excellent. Well, I'm so glad to hear that. Fantastic. All right, then. Let's switch the discussion up and talk about some super rares. As soon as the Age of Ultron spoilers went up during the day of Canadian Nationals, when we saw those uncommons and commons and rares spoiled, one super rare, Captain Universe, made everybody question a few different things. Mostly, what the heck is up with the numbers? There were a lot of theories thrown around. Maybe they're changing the way the sets are structured in terms of the numbering. Maybe they threw the basic actions at the end and they're doing something different there. Maybe, in fact, there are going to be additional super rares that are the Infinity Stones. But none of those were correct. As we know by now, it turns out that they are going to have 8 super rares, 4 of which are going to be Marvel Zombies. This isn't too huge a surprise. I believe in a recent Click set, they did Marvel Zombies as sort of chase characters, and there's going to be a similar role taken on here. But we wanted to take the time today, as those super rares tend to be, even if they're not always the best cards, sometimes they are, sometimes they're very good, sometimes they're okay, and we're still trying to find the usefulness for them. I think Scarlet Witch falls in that category. I love it, but I just haven't seen her used well. We're going to look at all of these, because they are very visible cards. So, we will start with Captain Universe, and we will go through all of them, including the zombies, and we will just kind of give our thoughts. But before we get to any of that, 8 super rares, what do we think?
I was going to say, I was just going to make a terrible joke about referencing an old TV show, but no, it wouldn't actually be appropriate. I think unless they're significantly upping the number of super rares we're getting per box, 8 is too many.
I sort of disagree. I think that this is that a little bit more variance in a gravity feed is something that, well, it's kept the cost of the game down. I still end up getting more than what I need anyway with all the stuff I end up getting. I think this is something a lot of folks who have a collector's mindset have been looking for, because for them it's been a little bit too easy. Get a feed, I almost have everything.
Yeah.
And now, so there's a whole mindset that I'm not one of those people, but there are lots of those people out there. And certain things, I guess I am. I like the thrill of the hunt. I like the chase. And for some people, that's what this is going to be.
Yeah, I mean, I also see it as like, well, and then there's going to be like 2 winners from that set of 8 now. And, you know, and then you get neither of them. As before, you know, you had a 50-50 chance of getting one of the good ones.
I kind of like all of them. I don't know. You know, even in the DC set, I think all of them except the Flash really get me kind of excited when I really think of the potential that they have. Obviously, I was most excited for Constantine, but nonetheless.
Yeah, for me, it doesn't really hurt my feelings at all. I mean, for just about every set so far, I've got, you know, 2 to 3 of the super rares. And if I have 2 to 3 of 4 of them or 2 to 3 of 8 of them, it's really not going to change my mindset as far as, you know, being complete.
No, I don't have the complete set of any of the super rares, and I'm okay. I'm closest on Uncanny X-Men now, thanks to pulling that Iron Man from that lucky collector's box. But I mean, I it's fine. I think what the super rare Spider-Man, isn't that the heroic one anyway?
Yeah.
Or am I thinking of something else? Yeah. Okay. So I really don't even care about it. I mean, yeah. All right. I don't know. What about you, JT? Do you have any kind of thoughts on the 8 super rares?
I personally love it. I love that they're doing something different. I don't want to get a gravity feed and have, hey, I got 9 of the super rares. You know, like, that's just goofy to me. Then is it really super rare?
I'm not saying we should get, like, you know, half of them in every box. I'm saying, like, I would at least like to see, you know, we're guaranteed one super rare and then one of the zombies or something, you know, in each box, as opposed to being, you know, you get one of eight, maybe, or two of eight. And I'm like, I'd like to see at least it go up to two guaranteed.
And they may do
Well, and the way they work it, yeah, but it just depends on their manufacturing process. The way they do it, they don't really make any guarantees. Their goal is to have one to two per feed, and I think we've seen in most feeds for the set since Uncanny X-Men came out, and including Uncanny X-Men, we've generally seen two apiece. Sometimes you get one.
I think we had a DC DC when we were drafting in Nationals, which didn't have any super rare.
It's possible. It depends on. They were using the gravity feed boxes to transport packs over to the draft table. That doesn't necessarily mean that it all was from an individual gravity feed.
That is true.
Because I saw how they were doing that. They were kind of getting people's packs together and then using empty gravity feed boxes because people were buying singles like crazy.
Yep. Oh, I know.
So yeah. All right, then. Let's look at all of these, and we're going to start with Captain Universe. I will read these. We can each kind of respond and just have whatever discussion we like about the car. Let's let it be organic and see where it goes from there. So the first one we have, Captain Universe Enigma Force. This is a six-fist Avenger. When fielded, draw and roll a die. If you rolled a character face on an Avenger die, you may field it immediately, paying all costs. Otherwise, place it in your prep area. And this is a three total fielding cost, or excuse me, a six total fielding cost. The stats go 5-5, 6-6, and 7-7. So I suppose at worst, you get something in your prep area for next turn. Yeah.
Yeah. Though you also have the potential of, you know, this triggers and then you can't actually field the character you roll.
Well, yeah, but if you can, at worst, it goes in your prep.
Oh, but then it does go straight into your preps if you don't wind up feeling it. So that's actually not that bad.
Right. So, like, okay, so I field her, I pull a Hulk out of the bag, and I'm like, oh, geez, how did I purchase a six-cost Hulk and a six-cost Captain Universe? And once I get past that, I say, well, I can't afford to field this. And
then you say, next time, Gadget, next time. And
something like that.
Area.
Or maybe it rolls level one and I'm happy with that and I can spare that energy. But yeah, it goes in prep and that's not so bad.
I think there's some interpretation that needs to be done there because it might be field it or I think if you read the otherwise a certain way, like if it's not an Avenger die, it goes in there or, you know, I don't know. I feel like maybe that's not as clear as it could be.
Yeah, I guess it really depends on where you attach the otherwise to.
It must be, no, I think it has to be an Avenger die. So all this is draw and roll the die. If you roll the character face and it's an Avenger die, you put it. Oh no, I do see. Yeah, I guess it could go in the prep area, even if it's not an Avenger.
Yeah.
Okay, I do see both of those there. Yes. We're gonna have to decide where otherwise goes. Good point. All right. I like this ability in general. I mean, certainly we're going to have plenty of Avengers running around in this set, and we already have plenty of Avengers running around right now. So, I mean, there's plenty of nifty ways that this could fit in, right?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I think this could be an absolute backbreaker to your opponent. I mean, if you field this Captain Universe, and then, yeah, you reach in, you grab a Hulk, and you have, you know, just enough energy to field that Hulk, then yeah, it could be over. But I think there's too much variance. There's too much of a chance to fail with it. That you can't really build a team around this idea.
I think it requires too much bag management. Right now the game is just keep everything in your prep area, not in your bag. And if you do end up with dice in your bag, I got to get them out as fast as I can and get ramped back up. Like this to me is just too much. Dependent on bag management when that's not the game right now.
That's true. It's going to be interesting to see how bag management changes, though, especially in light of cards like, what's her name? The Wasp, who does the damage every time your opponent uses a global ability while active. So, and that's a cheap character, a three-cost bolt right there. So people are going to have to start picking their poison. And certainly, I love it when we start to have those sorts of choices. But that not everybody does. All right. Well, then let's move forward and talk about the one that I'm probably looking forward to the most. Jocasta, patterned after Janet. Now, Jocasta is not a hero that I am familiar with in any way, shape, or form. Or I guess villain in this case.
She's Ultron's wife.
Oh, is she really? Okay.
Yes.
Well, interesting. So she is a four-bolt character, a villain. And her ability reads thusly. The first time each turn, Jocasta would be dealt damage. Instead, deal that damage to your opponent. The funniest thing is that when we were recording our DC show, I asked for something that did exactly this. And because we had a similar card in DC that does it, but it only can deal the damage to a character, not a player. And then, like, the next day, this card dropped. And I was like, yes! So here it is. Do you guys like this as much as I do? I guess is the question.
Yeah, I mean, there's going to be decks built around this character. Whether or not they're necessarily going to be fast enough to strongly compete remains to be seen. But I think they have at least a shot for it. And
they're going
to
be fun.
They're going to be fun no matter what.
Yeah, I do really like this card as well. This one didn't jump out at me when I saw all the super rares revealed. But Dave, after you kind of gushed over it, I took a closer look and realized this could be a fun card to use. I mean, you could damage Jocasta yourself through an action, or just, you know, send her to attack and let your opponent block, and, you know, that damage would be directed to your opponent. There's a couple different ways to trigger her ability and make your opponent pay for it.
I love the fact that you can do it on your turn or your opponent's turn. Your opponent taking damage on their turn is awesome.
It always is. I love forcing my opponent to do stuff. Now, I guess the way around it for your opponent would be like, okay, before I attack with anything, I ping Jocasta.
Yeah.
So now that kind of like takes her out of the game. But even in doing that, your opponent's saying, I'm okay with taking one to my face. The reason I'm excited about it and latched onto it right away is that I've been playing around with a deck on Magic the Gathering Online. It's a modern deck. And it involves many things, but a card called Boros Reckoner and another one very similar. And it has the exact same thing. Whenever Boros Reckoner is dealt damage, it deals that much damage to target creature or player. And then I have this crazy card that deals 13 damage to all creatures, and I have like two of these out and my opponent's dead. It's a little unwieldy, but when it works, oh man, it's so much fun. And I look at her and I think, Mjolnir.
Yep.
And I think of the damage, like, what is it, like 7 damage or something like that on the
six
one?
6 or 8.
6 or 8. Or get a couple, Jocasta's cheap, get a couple of those out, and then use the Mjolnir that deals, like, 4 damage to each villain or something like that. Now, I mean, that could be a little tough to have, like, 4 Jocastas in the field and then do that, but I have so much fun thinking of the possibilities, and I like cards that get my imagination working.
Yeah, this one definitely presents a new type of win condition, and that's great for the game.
That's a good point.
Well, I'm not sure I would call it necessarily a new win condition. It's direct damage. It's just in a much larger, potentially in a much larger chunk than we're used to with direct damage.
Yeah, but she's something you have to play around in a very different way. If I'm the opponent and I'm seeing Jocasta there, I have to think very differently about how I'm going to try to play. So she's a different win condition. Sometimes win conditions are how I'm going to win, and sometimes they're how I'm going to force my opponent to play around me, especially in something that might
That's
be a little
true.
Bit more controlling. I never set her stats, by the way. She's a total fielding cost of 4, and her stats go 1-4, 2-4, and 3-6. So she has okay defensive numbers. She has a little staying power, which is also good.
Now here's my question. If
Please.
I did 5 damage to Jocasta and she has 4 defense, how much damage would my opponent take?
Well, 5, because it's the first time each turn she would be dealt damage. Instead, deal that damage to your opponent. So she doesn't take anything. It's basically a full redirect to your face.
Okay.
Yep,
that makes sense reading it that way.
Yeah. And that's, I mean, obviously that's how it's also interpreted with the card that I was talking about earlier in Magic, and that's not necessarily going to connect, but the way it's worded doesn't seem to invite any different possibility. It doesn't seem to be like, deal damage up to her defense or something like that. It's pretty specific, deal that damage to your opponent. So, Let's move on to a fan favorite now, thanks to Guardians of the Galaxy, which successfully made a talking raccoon and a tree into fantastic superheroes. DC, are you taking notes? Why couldn't you make Green Lantern good? Anyway, Groot is a five-shield character. This is We Are Groot. We have the Guardians of the Galaxy affiliation here with him. While Groot is active, all your other fielded characters get plus three defense. And he has a total fielding cost of just two.
Three.
Five is right out. Total fielding cost of three. His stats go 1, 2, 2, 6, and 3, 7. So Groot really grows as he goes up those levels. I guess I don't mind one weak sauce face when
tiny regrowing baby.
That's form. What I was thinking of, yes. Well, everything at least has some survivability then, if nothing else. Your things get a lot harder to ping off the board. They need straight-up removal.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I'm sad because I think this is probably one of the weaker of the super rares we've seen. And I'm really sad because I like Groot a lot, as you can probably tell if you've looked at my icon on the forums.
Oh, is that what that is?
Yes, that is Groot.
I think five cost is just a touch too much for him.
I agree. I think it's a helpful ability, but it's not really an impact ability. And I think that's a little much for just something that's helpful.
I'm going to withhold judgment until we see the rest of the set. I think this could really have an impact, especially if, you know, there's a counter card that does something similar with attack, and then you need the survivability. I'll hold on. I don't know. I think there's potential here, and before I write it off, I want to see the rest of the set.
Yeah, I'd like to hope he has some synergies with Rocket Raccoon, but the rare Rocket Raccoon that we saw spoiled doesn't really have anything to do with Groot either. We'll have to see what we get with the Guardians. I think that's a fair, level-headed position to take there. All right, so that is Groot. Let's now talk about the last non-zombie super rare, Thanos.
Oh, yeah.
Thanos Infinite. Oh, I know. A lot of people were excited for this one. This one looks pretty darn cool. This is a 10-mask character, the villain, of course. He's got Overcrush here, and he has also this interesting text. Well, let me tell you about the rest of him first. He has Overcrush. He's a total fielding cost of 6. His stats go 5-7. It looks like 7-5, and then is that 9-9? It's a little blurry here on my photo.
I think it's 9-9, yeah.
I think the second one is 7-8.
You guys have that uncut sheet there? Is it
7-8? Well, 5-7, 7-8, and then I think it's 9-9.
That looks about right.
Okay. Oh, you did you put that sheet away? I thought you had it there with you.
Oh yeah, we'll check it real quick. Sorry.
Like, we're going for the source here, man. Come on.
7-8. One thing I'd like to bring up while we're searching for the videotape, why is his dye orange?
That's kind of an interesting question.
What's the color of the Infinity Gauntlet?
I guess that's true.
Yeah, okay.
And I would almost have liked to see the colors reversed and have it be a purple dye with orange ink, but...
That would be cool. Okay, you said it was a 7-8 there on the middle face, I think, in the background, right?
Yes.
Okay. All right, so let's read the real interesting part here. Whenever one of your villains deals combat damage to an opponent, put an Infinity counter on Thanos. Thanos dice costs 2 less to purchase for each Infinity counter on Thanos. You know what I have to say here? It reminds me actually a little bit of the way that the Galactus countdown works in Galactus mode.
Yeah.
I think WizKids should give you some credit, Randy.
I think everyone should give me credit, really.
Also, he has Overcrush, so don't forget that.
Yes, he does have Overcrush, so, you know, when you're attacking for potentially as much as 9, and maybe even more depending on your other villains and what synergies they give you, you know, he's one that must be dealt with. I think this is really, really darn cool, but I can't help but wonder if he's going to be a little unwieldy as well.
Well, I mean, there's definitely the potential to use the villain making globals to get sort of anything to do this, especially if you combine it with Patch and Avengers. And then you're getting 2 tokens at once.
Oh, because they don't double their combat damage. They deal combat damage twice. Interesting. I wonder how that's a really neat interaction.
I'm more interested in attacking with a couple of sidekicks, you know, on the second turn and turning those into villains before my opponent potentially has any blockers in play.
Yeah. And all of a sudden, then that makes him a six cost, and that's very, very viable very early.
Yeah, why not go whole hog? Go whole hog. Get, like, three sidekicks out, mask them all.
Oh, yeah, if you can, that's great.
That's later in the game, yeah.
Well, no, I'm saying you could potentially, first turn you put out two sidekicks, second turn you put out another one, mask all of them, boom, turn three you're buying four cost Thanoses.
Well, that's also kind of one of those and the sun and the moon and the stars interactions, right, too. Right. But yeah, certainly it shows all of the potential there, and that's pretty cool.
Well, and we don't know if there's going to be any Retaliate in this upcoming Marvel set, too. I mean, put Black Manta. I mean, this Thanos could fit pretty well on one of those villain Retaliate teams with Black Manta, because you already have the villain synergy.
Right. Though, I mean, of course, we're also going to have to see what does... I saw a question. What counts as combat damage? And I think this was asked on the rules forum. I mean, obviously, it's damage dealt when damage is assigned and cleared and all that
stuff.
Oh,
yeah, I'm not but, saying... Like, is, I'm can not damage saying during the attack Manta step...
No, I know. But I'm just saying that was a question that was brought up. I suspect it's going to be a pretty strict interpretation of what combat damage is. Otherwise, this would be nuts. Yeah. I don't think it's going to be any damage done in the attack step. But certainly I understand why folks want to ask that question. It's a lot of fun stuff to think about when you see these cards. And again, your imagination just goes, and you want things to be true because you look at this and you think of all the possibilities that you have. Anything else on Thanos right now? JT, you've been suspiciously quiet.
I love this card, and I think it's going to impact the game in more ways than we can even imagine right now. I just think it's that good, and people will be that excited about it, and they'll experiment that much with it that there's going to be things happen with it that we just can't even wildly predict right now.
And it's thematic. It's thematic. Yeah. The Infinity Gauntlet has five Infinity Stones. And he can put up to five Infinity Counters on Thanos.
That's true. Well are we going to see lower limit of one unless otherwise stated? Because that's generally what it's been. Are we going to be allowed to go to zero with this or not? That's going to be an interesting question. But the fact is it's max four. Even if the lowest you can get him to is one, you can all of a sudden open the floodgates and now you have four Thanos dice running around. And now maybe you have Sinestro that makes your villains cost less to field. Gosh, Sinestro and Thanos on the same team, just in, like, superhero. I'm getting, like, a crazy... Yeah, wow, that'd be something.
I would love to see a game last thing where Thanos somebody needs for all four Thanos dice. Because if they can't win with Overcrush and just even two or three, and they had to buy the fourth one, that's too much.
Well, I mean... I think he's interesting, and I think he has I think there are a lot of possibilities, and I certainly agree that a lot of people are going to mess with him, but I worry on the other end of that there's just a little bit of win more here.
Well, like you say, all you need to do is sneak a few sidekicks through with the right global.
Yeah. Yeah, that's fair. I don't know. I just wonder if it's the best use of... if it's the best use of time. Certainly, I'm gonna play with this too. I mean, this is a lot of fun, but that's the one thing that I wonder. But the great thing is, we have versions of this card out there. We can see the artwork. We can proxy and start messing with it right now.
Right.
And that's a lot of the fun.
Yeah.
All right then, let's get into the zombies, the Marvel zombies, which is frankly not something I know a ton about. I know that it exists. I know that it's something that's real. And I know very little else. I know that there are Marvel things and there are zombies.
It's a side series in an alternate universe, in one of the many, many Marvel alternate universes.
A comic alternate universe, you don't say.
Yep.
First up, we have Electro, Cooked Meat. It's a four-fist zombie. When fielded, you knock out all non-zombie Electro. And also when fielded, do two damage to each player. If an opponent has an active Spider-Man... you take no damage from this effect. So you field them, you deal two damage to your opponent, you deal two damage to yourself, unless your opponent has Spider-Man, in which case you don't have to damage yourself. The stats, with total fielding cost of 3, he goes 1, 4, 2, 5, and 3, 6. I mean,
this is certainly a thing.
It's nifty. It's thematic. That's about the best I can say.
I mean, I guess if spider bombs were still, like, all the rage, he'd be not necessarily a bad idea, but...
Well, all he does is you don't damage. Take two. Yeah, I don't see how that really plays in. I don't know. Not... Can anybody help me see the light on this one?
We're looking.
Nope. we're searching for
it. He's not terrible, but he's not particularly interesting, I think.
I think most of these zombie cards are just trying to go for straight thematic. And if they become effective in the process, so be it.
I think people will have fun with these too, but I don't think there's some. I think it's going to take some work to see where they fit in competitively. Now I say that the next two or three that we read, I could be like, oh, hey, this one. But all right, well, we're not excited by that one. Let's move on then. Gladiator, Intergalactic Terror, a 5-bolt zombie. So again, when fielded, you're knocking out all non-zombie gladiators. While he's active, Gladiator gets +2/+2 for each of your other active mask characters. All active Phoenix dice lose their abilities. He is a total fielding cost of 6. His stats go 3, 4, 5, 5, and 7, 6. Actually, I kind of like this one.
Hello, Morphing
Jar.
Yeah,
I mean...
yeah. Flood it with that one cost mask and go to town.
Yeah.
The thematicness of the... of the all active Phoenix dice lose their abilities is fine, but +2/+2 for each other active mask character. And you know, a lot of those mask characters that are cheap, some of them have good stats. Morphing Jar's stats are really not bad at all.
Yeah.
And he's only 5-bolt.
And you can make your Quenins do work.
Yeah. Give him Overcrush.
Yeah. I'd also like to just take a second to say I love the dice for these guys. They're all looking from ones later on. They're the normal dice. They just have a particular color scheme of like yellow and black or yellow and something like sort of a sickly yellow green.
Yeah.
And then it's like the icons would all like chewed up and cracked and whatnot. And they look really cool.
It's true.
You know, I look at this card and I think about the match I played against the Weenie Rush team. And, you know, by the time Patrick had all those guys out on the field, you know, there were at least a couple Morphing Jars and a couple Psylocke Assassins. Like, he had plenty of energy to buy this guy, and I brought Polymorph so he could have had him in the field, and all of a sudden, you know, you're adding 8 attack, 8 defense. This is a win condition in and of itself for the Weenie Rush team.
Yeah, this is a pretty darn cool card. I like this one a lot. So there we go. I told you it might happen. all right, let's move on then to Magneto, Magnetic Monster, a 6-shield zombie. You're going to KO all non-zombie Magnetos. While active, opposing characters with purchase cost 3 or lower lose their abilities. Professor X can't be fielded. Total fielding cost is 6. Stats go 4, 3, 5, 6, and I believe is that 6, 8 there.
Correct.
And This is kind of interesting because so long, all of you 2-costers who are annoying me. Beast, you can't do anything to me. Black Widow, haha, sorry. Gabi, not a chance.
Constantine, sit down.
Wah.
Yeah. Quannon, no more removal.
Yep.
The new Wasp as well.
Yeah, Wasp too. This kind of like just... Well, you know, actually so much of the Flying Sidekick teams too, because those are... 3-cost or lower that are buffing the sidekicks, except for maybe 1 or 2 cards that we have available to us. That's a pretty powerful ability.
And here's something I thought of yesterday, and I was actually holding to spring on you guys until now. If there are abilities that lower purchase costs, not temporarily, but like sort of across the board, like we're starting to see in DC, would that make them fall under the purview of this?
No, I think it's the actual purchase cost as written on the card. Yeah, that would be pretty cool. But at the same time, if your opponent's relying on their Aquaman to purchase cost, then it's like, oh, wait, Aquaman can't do that anymore. Or using that Wonder Woman to, I think she's a 3, though. She might be a 4.
I think she's a 4.
She is a 4. Never mind. Okay. I forget that I said that.
That would be funny if, like, you know, Aquaman's ability stayed and then it made, you know, all your guys are now threes and now they can't do anything. And you're like,
oh, that would be funny, but there's no way. Yeah, there's no way. It has to be looking straight up purchase cost. But yeah, I like this one a lot. So actually, there we go. Two in a row that are pretty hefty.
No, Magneto's probably my favorite of them.
Yeah, and Six Heal, it's not out of reach.
Yeah. Also, it's great art.
Yeah, that was a cool one. Okay. How about Red Skull, Undying Evil? 5-mask zombie here. You're going to knock out all non-zombie Red Skulls. While active, opponent can't attack with more than one sidekick per turn, and Captain America can't attack. This goes total fielding cost of 6. The stats are 3-5, 5-5, and 6-6. We want to talk about thematic. Every Captain America card is about something with sidekicks, except for maybe one of them. I think his heroic one does not do that. But almost every Captain America card to this point is something with sidekicks, bringing along the sidekicks, rallying the troops, and then we have Zombie Red Skull that's like, nope, sorry.
Yeah, I mean, I see him as a counter to flying sidekick, but...
Oh, not much else, but it's a great thematic thing.
Yeah, no, he's very thematically neat, and that is some terrifying art. I think it's from the first issue of Marvel Zombies, or maybe the second. It's from early. I've seen it. I've only read the first couple of issues of it. So,
it does. That art does look like it's from the first series of Marvel Zombies, for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, this one, I mean, I hate to end on this card then, but... that's okay. It's fun. So, I guess if we look at the super rares as a whole... I mean, okay, so we liked Magneto, we liked Gladiator, we liked Thanos, we liked Jocasta. We're okay, but maybe a little sour on the universe, Captain Universe. There's at least half of these that are pretty solid, which, I mean, generally, that's
about what we see, yeah.
Yeah, we already had about half of the existing super rares have been pretty solid, sometimes not even that many. Yeah. I mean, the super rares in Uncanny X-Men are nice. I like Scarlet Witch, but I haven't found a good way to use her yet. The super rares in D&D, again, about 50-50 on do we like them or not. Super rares in DC have been, well, I guess except for the Flash, they're all okay. Obviously, I think they kind of more have a curve going down instead of, like, here are two great ones and here are two not-so-great ones.
Here's one completely ridiculously amazing one, and they're all, and then, you know, most of them are,
well,
at least decent.
It goes down, yeah. I mean, Catwoman messes up Ramp, and Black Canary has utility, and then I think Flash is probably on the bottom for me. I would go Constantine, Catwoman, Black Canary, Flash, but again, we're looking at these now. So even though there are more of them, we still have about the same usefulness quotient, and so you still have a good shot at, like, getting something you're going to like to use.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree with all of that that was just said.
All right. Consensus. I love it. Unless JT does not agree.
No, I'm hip to all that.
All right. Well, that brings us to the end of this episode of The Reserve Pool. Before we go, we have to remind you that we are not just The Reserve Pool podcast anymore. We have The Attack Zone, and you can hear us. That episode has been released, unless iTunes is taking an inordinate amount of time, which sometimes happens with new feeds. That show is a little bit more focused on strategy, and in fact, in this first episode of it, you will also hear JT hanging out with us there, too. So, The Attack Zone, it's there. Check it out. Check out everything we have going on the site. There is so much happening right now. You can find people who are playing around you. You can read articles. You can participate in the forums. You can blog about your own stuff. You can add to the wiki. You can share files for the good of the community. You can play online with other people in our ladder, like we have an online league. There's so much darn stuff you can do. Get out there and do it. It's awesome.
Yep.
It is, in All fact, right. awesome.
Everything is, in fact, awesome.
Everything is cool when you're part of a team. And I got to say, 1 year in, I'm really thrilled with the team that we have here at the Reserve Pool. And I'm thrilled with the greater community, because aren't we all on the same team? All right. I feel like we just did the what if we learned at the end of Jerry Springer. So we're going to close this out.
G.I. Joe.
Oh, no. We're going to close this out. I was going to say before Evan says something ridiculous.
Too late.
Yeah. All right. Well, thanks so much for spending some time with us. There are lots of ways to do it, and we're so pleased that you do that with us. I'm Dave.
I'm Evan.
I'm Randy.
And I'm JT.
And this has been The Reserve Pool. We'll see you again soon.
Bye, everybody.
Bye.
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 Night, John Boy.
Bye. Bye.
Night, Ma. Night, Pa.
Go to bed, John Boy. Well then, is everybody still there?
Yes.
Okay, I thought I heard a somebody log off sound. Evan, you there?
Yes.
Okay.
I've been trying very hard to not make horrible snorting sounds.
All right, that's one for the outtakes. That's okay. We're gonna move into the team. I'm gonna snap here. All right. So.
Sorry.
My impression of Evan right now. Okay. Anyway.
That sounds about right.
Yep.